I can tell from looking at you that when you folks walk into the dining room, the first thing on your mind is, what's for dessert, right? Mm-hmm. What are some of the favorite desserts that you especially enjoy? Chocolate. Anything chocolate? Anything chocolate. I had an elderly parishioner up in Lewis County who used to say,
Father, I think a balanced diet means chocolate in both hands.
What are some other favorite desserts you all have?
Lemon meringue.
Lemon meringue. Key lime pie. Cheesecake. Ice cream. Any special flavor of ice cream? Any kind of ice cream. Okay. So, now that I've got you salivating, you'll probably all make a beeline for the dining room and forget the rest of the mess. What's for dessert is an important question, and I'm reminded of that in a rather amusing way. At Blessed Sacrament, almost any time we have a gathering for a meal in our parish hall, there's a significant portion of people, especially older men, it seems, and little kids, who do not go first to the beverage table to get a glass of water. They don't go first to, you know, find a place at a table. They don't go first to see what's on the buffet table. They go first to the dessert table, you know, and often take their dessert, and some of them even eat it before they ever get the rest of the meal. I was in a bakery shop once where I saw a sign that said, life is short, eat dessert first. So, I can remember too as a kid, you know, you'd see in the kitchen that mom had a pie or a cake or some kind of really nice dessert. Well, that was a little bit more motivation to clean my plate and make sure that I had plenty of room left and wouldn't be denied the privilege of the sweetness at the end of the meal. It does us good to know what's coming at the end. And that's why we celebrate this feast of the Assumption of Mary. For we're not only celebrating an event in her life at the end of her earthly time, we are celebrating what God does for Mary to demonstrate what God desires and intends to do for all of us. The dessert at the end of this earthly meal. Sometimes the best dessert comes at a meal when you're having liver and onions. Sometimes we don't particularly enjoy the main course of the meal. Sometimes the taste isn't so good, or the meat is a little tough or dry or whatever. But if we're really motivated by the dessert, you know, we're willing to sink our teeth into the rest of that meal. And so the church wants us to not forget what's for dessert. Hold on to that image of what's coming for all of us. And hear the challenge and encouragement of the vision of Mary. Okay, I'll be charismatic for the rest of my life, I promise. Okay. Hear the challenge and the encouragement both of the vision of Mary in her heavenly glory and of the proclamation that she makes to Elizabeth and to all of us in that marvelous Magnificat. For this woman has a really strong sense not only of what's for dessert, but the fact that she's already tasting it. Do you notice in that wonderful proclamation, the verbs are all the present perfect for all you grammarians. Mary is not saying God will. Mary is not saying God may. Mary is saying God has already done it. He has confused the proud in their inmost thoughts. He has raised up the lowly to high places. He has fed the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. What can she be talking about? She's a teenager, an unmarried pregnant teenager, going to visit her elderly cousin. And in this Magnificat, Mary speaks for all of Israel, remembering the Exodus, the great things God has done, lifting up a tribe of slaves and giving them their own nation and independence. And then later, when things get messed up and they've been carried off into exile, bringing them back to their land, humbled, chastened, really struggling, but letting them know that they are still God's chosen people. God has done these things. Mary knows and is confident that this is what is for dessert, and we have already begun to taste it to the degree that we have recognized God's work in our own lives. I'm willing to bet that every one of us here can name personal experiences which were unexpected, unplanned, and clearly examples of God touching our lives in a very direct and personal way. And I can tell you that one of the big ones for me was when I was happily ministering as a priest in Massachusetts and got this inner voice saying, West Virginia. And I said, no, Lord, not West Virginia. Oh, go anywhere else, but not West Virginia. The rednecks, they will eat me for lunch. I'm a city kid from New England. You can't? I'm coming through the microphone. Okay, you want to come sit up front here? Why don't you do that? That'd be good. My words are so good, I don't want anybody to miss a single one. Oh, you can come further than that. You want to hear, honey, you're going to hear. Can you hear me now? Good. Okay. Thank you for letting me know. Okay, and all the rest of you that can't hear, move up. So, we celebrate Mary as the demonstration of what's for dessert. And we hear her encouragement and challenge to know how we are to get through the rest of the meal, which doesn't always taste good. For Mary herself, as well as for us. And particularly, I think, when we celebrate these special feasts of Mary, like the Assumption, it's really important for us to remember the focus of our attention here is really not Mary. It's what God is doing in and for Mary and for all of us. For she is aware of how God has looked upon her in her lowliness. And she herself has been raised to a high place. Mary knows that this is the truth. For everyone who truly knows the Lord in every time and every place, God has done it. Not God may do it, or even God will do it, but God has done it for you and for me, just as for Mary. So our celebration of this Feast of the Assumption and our hearing of this great proclamation of the Magnificat is a moment when we too hear those challenging words of Elizabeth. Blessed is she who trusted that the Lord's words to her would be fulfilled. So you know what's for dessert. Do you trust what's for dessert? Do you let that vision guide you through the whole meal? Do you let that confidence and joy determine your mood and your attitude and the way you do everything every day? Does Mary's example help us to face those hardest and darkest and most painful moments of life? Not by whitewashing or pretending that there's no problems, but precisely by understanding that they're part of a much bigger, bigger picture. We know what's for dessert. We celebrate what God has done in Mary and for all of us. And there is plenty of reason for us too to say, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God, my Savior."